Welcome to That's Orgasmic, a podcast discussing the orgasmic and not so orgasmic moments of all things sex, relationships, and mental health. I am your host, Emily Duncan, and I'm a sexologist who provides online sex coaching sessions to help you cultivate sexual wellness. This podcast is being recorded on Wurundjeri land. We pay our respect to the traditional custodians of this country and elders past and present. We extend that respect to any First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people joining us today. Please enjoy this episode. Welcome back to That's Orgasmic. Today's episode is all about jealousy, what it is, why we experience it, and what jealousy can teach us about ourselves and our relationships and how we can navigate jealousy. We also talk about monogamy and non-monogamy and differences that Dr. Jolie Hamilton has found in her research when it comes to jealousy in these different relationship structures. So it's a super interesting episode that everybody will be able to get some value from. I also just want to quickly talk about my Sunroom. Sunroom is a website slash app that you can ask me any of your sex or relationship questions. So you can message me in real time and have a chat with me. You can ask for me to like send a video answering a question, whatever it is, instead of having to like book a full session with me. If you rather just have me answer one specific question, I can do that for you. So my Sunroom is called That's Orgasmic, and the link to my Sunroom is in the show notes. I also have a favor to ask. Out of the thousands of you that listen, only 30% are subscribed, and it would mean the world to me if you enjoy listening to this podcast. Just click that subscribe button. It takes 2 seconds. You can literally do it right now while I'm talking, and it honestly just makes such a huge difference in helping the show get to more people and also just helping the show continue and honestly give me a bit of motivation to keep making episodes. So I'll never really ask a favor of you, so that's just one small one. So if you could do that, that would be amazing. But anyway, that's all from me, so please enjoy this interview. Today I'm joined with Dr. Jolie Hamilton, who is a relationship coach for couples who colour outside the lines. She's a research psychologist, TEDx speaker, best-selling author, ASEC certified sex educator, and Jolie also co-hosts Playing with Fire podcast with her anchor partner Ken. So thank you so much for coming on to That's Orgasmic to chat with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I would love to talk to you about jealousy today. It's something that's definitely come up on the podcast in little bits and pieces when you're talking about sex and relationships, but I've never dedicated a whole episode. So to begin, like really stripping it back to the basics, what is jealousy?
Oh, I'm so glad you're starting there, because often we actually talk about jealousy and we conflate it with a bunch of other things. So yeah, definitions. Jealousy is a protective emotion that is designed to keep us connected to our valued others, right? So if I'm feeling jealousy, it's because I'm feeling a threat to a valued relationship connection. And I can spot jealousy because there's a triangle. I can see if I'm the jealous one, there's me at one point on the triangle. There's my beloved, my valued other on another point. And then there is the third, the perceived interrupter, the one who I either imagine is going to interfere with my relationship or who actually is. And it kind of doesn't matter whether I imagine it or whether they are objectively interfering. Jealousy shows up whenever I feel that threat. And it brings along with it a whole bunch of other emotions. Jealousy is a complex emotion made of a whole bunch of other things, like, well, and it's specific to you, your flavor of jealousy. It might come with some anger, sadness, grief, anticipatory grief, anxiety, fear, total panic, also shame and envy. And a lot of times people can't tell the difference between their jealousy and envy, and it's because they can show up at the same time.
So what is the difference then between jealousy and envy?
Yeah. Envy is about myself and one other person, right? Having something I want or being someone I wish to be, right? It's about this longing to, but this distance between like, oh, I am not who I want to be. They are, better than me in some way. So envy becomes about who I am not or what I don't have, whereas jealousy is about, I have this thing, I don't want to lose it. I have this relationship and I don't want to lose it. So at envy, we can spot it because there's just the two people involved. And jealousy, there's three. But like I said, envy can show up at the same time as jealousy because it's really easy to imagine. If you're picturing that triangle, then if I perceive an interrupter, I could also be envious because I could think, oh, they're smarter than me. They're prettier than me. They're doing something I'm not able to do, whatever that is. And now I'm envious of them and at the same time also experiencing this jealous emotion, this big glop of other emotions. It's messy. Jealousy is messy. Let's be real.
It sounds very messy. Like it feels messy, but then also like, you know, hearing, I guess, it defined also makes so much sense about the envy and jealousy at the same time. I think I've experienced that so many times in my life, particularly in romantic relationships. There's just like, as soon as there's that perceived interrupter, whether it's, you know, from just me, you know, I don't want to say making it up, but, you know, creating something that maybe isn't necessarily like them being a genuine interrupter, I find that envy like also will like really wiggle its way through.
Yeah. And let's be real. It got a lot easier to create envy in our lives when we introduced a constant stream of images of other people's lives into our life. It comes through our social media, right? And I love social media. I'm on it all the time too. But when that entered our life, now it's not just, oh, you know, I think my partner's being flirted with by that girl over there at the other end of the bar. Now it's who pressed like on my partner's Facebook post? Who's Snapchatting with them? And I don't even know. And now we can imagine into this perceived interruption really easily because we see little dribs and drabs of evidence all over the place. And even just one tiny little speck of evidence can then get blown up by our imagination because our imagination is so powerful. And it's important to note, jealousy is there for a reason. It's not frivolous. And I never recommend people try to get rid of it or cure it. Because it's evolutionarily designed, right? It's there for a reason. It was designed to keep us connected to our primary caregivers so that they would keep us safe when we were infants. And we can spot it in infants. There are studies. We can spot it in infants. And now we have it. And here we are in our grown-up romantic relationships. And usually we really haven't learned a better way to deal with it. So it shows up and it puts us back in this yicky toddler-like sort of feeling or this teenage feeling. But the jealousy itself is a threat detection system. It's trying to tell you, hey, there's something there. There's something going on. And now I need to sort out, okay, what's the objective reality here? What's happening? But often I'm overwhelmed. Often I can't even name my jealousy because jealousy also, again, is usually felt with a bunch of shame too. Most of us don't want to be proudly saying like, I'm super jealous. Instead, we hide it. So now it gets all tangled up in a mush. And messes are hard to pick apart, but jealousy is worth it. When we pull apart jealousy, we find more access to ourselves. And there's an opportunity to actually trust our partners in a new way, to deepen our connection with them in a new way. But we got to actually own the jealousy and recognize it for what it is.
Yeah. So the reason we experience jealousy is because it's more of like an evolutionary thing where it's to try and, I guess, manage threats to the relationship so we're not left on our own.
Right. Yeah. So there are lots of perspectives we could take, but it's really helpful to remember that we're animals. And yeah. So every reaction we have, you know, anger is to help us get, you know, create change. When we feel that there is a sense of unfairness, if we feel that there is something that we need to make right, we will experience anger. If we feel loss, we will feel sadness, right? So our emotions have these very primal reasons for existing. And jealousy is just another emotion. And there are actually a couple different theories to get really technical about it. And some of them see jealousy as a very primal emotion. And some of them see jealousy as a complex emotion made of these other more primal emotions. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. Because functionally speaking, when you experience this jealousy, it was designed, it's there, complex or primal, it's there to protect a valued relationship. And we often overreact to it, or we habitually underreact to it, which can also cause problems. And we find ourselves in situations where we are actually experiencing harm and damage and not reacting to our jealousy. So we really have to reckon with it. But culturally, we're not taught about jealousy. I've sat with thousands of people conversing about jealousy, and I'll ask you this question. Did your parents sit down with you and teach you about how to work with jealousy when you were a kid or when you were a teenager?
Nobody ever has at all.
No, mine either. Mm. And I really believe, and I have seven kids, and when they were little, I was not yet a jealousy researcher, and I didn't either. I taught them about all these other emotions, but I didn't sit with them and be like, okay, so you have a new sibling, and here's how we work with jealousy when you're three, and here's how we'll work with it when you're 13. So instead, we all grow up and we're like doing the best we can, but reacting from this very juvenile, freaked out place when jealousy pops up, or intellectualizing about it and pretending like we never get jealous, or people who get jealous are just like unevolved. And that's not helpful either.
No, it's not. I've definitely heard that before. I find a lot of people, and you've said this, like, that they feel a lot of shame around jealousy because they think it's a bad emotion. Like, it gets labeled bad, that you shouldn't experience it. And if you do, there's something wrong with that. I guess just to, like, I know what your answer is going to be, but to clarify for the listeners, is, like, you know, is jealousy bad?
Yeah. Let's be super clear about this. No emotion is bad. No emotion is bad. And I would actually go so far to say no emotion is inherently negative either. I have some proof to prove that jealousy is not actually inherently negative. But the American Psychological Association has they have a dictionary, an online dictionary. Anybody could type in jealousy, American Psychological Association definition. And what will pop up, at least in the year 2023 and 2024, it is still a negative emotion, blah, 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 blah. Right off the bat. Now, they don't say this about sadness or anger, but wouldn't you classify anger, if you were going to classify jealousy as negative, wouldn't you classify anger as negative? Yeah. We have demonized jealousy because we have a cultural shadow around jealousy. We have not, as a group, said, you know what? Jealousy is an emotion with value in its own right. And I have a bunch of theories about why, but there's one that's really important to name, which is jealousy is super dangerous. It's not bad and it's not negative, but in America, the most recent study I have seen said 73% of domestic violence cases, there is a listing somewhere in the report of jealousy-induced behavior or jealousy being blamed for bad behavior, for objectively damaging behavior. So jealousy really can be made into actions that are incredibly harmful. But demonizing the emotion itself actually just pushes us further away from dealing with the root of, wow, when jealousy comes up, it inspires us often to take bad action. And that needs to be a much broader conversation. So I don't want to get rid of jealousy. I want to instead have us start to relate to it in a way that says, yeah, jealousy has something to teach me about myself, about my attachment history, and about how I'm in my current relationship or relationships.
Yeah. And it's what's the word? Like, hearing the statistics, I'm not surprised that jealousy is something that comes up. It's the same in Australia. You hear it. They'll call it a crime of passion because jealousy has fueled it. And I'm trying to think of the word. Sad, scary. It's a whole heap of different things that I guess come up with that, you know, we can experience an emotion and that it actually can be, you know, result in harmful behavior. Do you have like any points that you found in your research that, like, for people who either experiencing themselves or maybe you're on the other side, of when to be able to notice when it's starting to become like a problem?
Yeah. It's really important to recognize the difference between feeling an emotion and experiencing the actions, the behaviors of an emotion. And this is why jealousy actually, it calls to me. Like, I study jealousy not because I don't get jealous. It's quite the opposite. But I study jealousy because when jealousy comes up, the most frequent thing I see people do, and I think anyone who's ever sat with a friend who's jealous will recognize this. The most frequent thing we do, if we can admit that there's jealousy present, is we point our fingers at the person who we are scared of losing. And we say, you fix this. You did this. Fix it. And that pointing of our fingers might actually look like lashing out in anger, lashing out with actions, or it might look like controlling behaviors. It can look like a lot of things. But as soon as jealousy becomes a reason to take action that you would not accept in any other circumstance, right away we have a problem. So that could be just as simple as if a person explains away monitoring your phone because they're experiencing jealousy, that is problematic in itself. Now, if they have a real reason to be scared, they need to negotiate with you. We need to have more conversations about the agreements that we actually need to have in our relationships, the understanding of what we need and how we will feel the boundaries of our relating is well held. But a lot of the times what we do is we just jump to, hey, you gotta stop this. Stop whatever you're doing. And often jealousy also comes with anger. And if your jealousy is angry flavored, and you tend to lash out in either words or hands, right, with anger, then jealousy is going to be a bigger and more important piece of the relational puzzle for you to solve quickly, because this is going to cause abusive dynamics to happen. And we can't allow that to happen, because jealousy itself could bring you closer to your partner. It could be, bring you closer to yourself. But if you try to fix it by like addressing somebody else first before addressing what's going on in you, you're skipping the beat. You're skipping some really important steps. And that showed up in my research because I didn't expect to find a clear path out of jealousy. But when I was doing my research, I was doing all these interviews with people, and the people who were successfully navigating jealousy were doing the same things over and over again. And the first thing they were doing was noticing when jealousy came up. They were noticing it in their body. They were like, oh, crap, this is a lot. And they would name their jealousy, and they would take responsibility for the fact that it was their emotion. And after that, they could assess for what this means in their relationship and what they need in their relationship. But the very first thing to do was to take the pause and let themselves acknowledge that whatever their partner's doing, the jealousy itself belongs to them.
Yeah, which is an extremely important thing to be able to sit with and recognize. And I know even just emotions in general, like identifying them, we're not necessarily taught that. So it can be really hard to do. And I'd love to talk more about these steps. But before, I guess we kind of like go towards that, you mentioned there like, jealousy can, you can like, I can't remember exactly how you worded it, but like leaning more into yourself or into the relationship and like, you know, learning. So what can jealousy actually teach us? Like, what opportunities are there within ourselves or the relationship to, I guess, grow?
Yeah. So let's talk first about the relationship you have with yourself, because even if we can get jealous over people, even if we're not in a committed relationship, and maybe we don't get to really negotiate with them about what we get from them. We can experience jealousy also with our, amongst our siblings for our parents' attention. We can experience jealousy, in a workplace environment when we have this like, oh, I want the boss to want me for this. And, oh, I feel like this other person is now like intervening and getting in the way of me being connected to someone who very really does impact my safety and my ability to succeed in this world. So jealousy can show up in all sorts of contexts. And when we're talking about it, if we return to, oh, jealousy is coming up and it's in me, I have now a lot of very nebulous information that's been delivered to me. Nebulous because when jealousy comes up, it often comes up it feels like a tidal wave within, or people will describe to me like knots in their stomach, or they feel sick, they feel overwhelmed, they feel heartburn. Ugh, they don't like the sensations of it. And right there, one of the ways they could get to know themselves better, right? And that's what I mean. When I say deepen your self-intimacy, it's to really hold like, whoa, there is some story in there about what it means for my relationship to be threatened. There is some really powerful story about my not being safe, or my not being enough, my not being okay. And before I even get to deepening my connection to the other, whoa, am I able to be safe in myself? What if my jealousy is objectively justifiable? What if it's real? There is a real threat. Will I still be okay on my own? Like at a core level, could I be okay? And realistically, a lot of us could sit with that jealous information we're getting and say, wow, the answer is no, I would not be okay. I would be really messed up, probably for a very long time. And from there, you could potentially take that and look at it as, okay, maybe I have some attachment wounding work that I could take on. Or maybe I need to just practice being able to sit with this really uncomfortable emotion. Or maybe I need to actually take steps to feel solid and secure in myself. Like I can hold myself, because even if our partners act perfectly, at the end of the day, someone's going to die. Someone's going to, like, none of us are protected from loss. The one thing all humans who ever exist will experience is loss. So if we have to be protected from loss, there is deep work we can do. So that is not, I don't want to be overly prescriptive, because there are a lot of ways we could work with that. I could work with it emotionally. I could work with it from an attachment standpoint. I could work with it from the perspective of, hey, maybe I want to make sure I have a stronger community around me so that I'm not putting all of my emotional eggs in one basket. Maybe I want to make sure that I have the ability to actually be in discomfort without self-harming. Like some people actually feel like, oh, I might be a risk to myself, my taking my own life or self-harming because I feel this threat. All of these could be ways that I grow in my ability to hold myself tenderly. And that right there, that is a piece of natural human development that a lot of us struggle to attain. We struggle to hit our adulthood and say, yeah, I want to relate. And I also want to be able to be there for myself. And this isn't an either or thing. This is a, what if I want the other and I also want to be there for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to hear too that there's so many different things you can do if you are experiencing jealousy to be able to understand it, process it, and grow with it. That it's not, you know, as you said, this one prescriptive thing, here's what you do and, you know, you'll be on your way. So yeah, it's great to, I guess, hear that, especially if you're somebody listening who experiences jealousy and you just, you know, feel like there's just no getting out of it, that, you know, you can really. And also for those, I guess, who do experience jealousy but haven't thought of it as an emotion to be able to grow. I think that's also really important, because a lot of people are just like, as I said earlier, like, we'll just think of it as a negative emotion and be like, oh, we'll just push that to the side. There's no value in that.
Right. If nothing else, imagine how empowered you would feel. So I am a person who has experienced really profound jealousy, and I've worked with a lot of people who experience very profound jealousy. And imagine what it feels like to go from that space where you're like, any potential threat feels overwhelming to my nervous system and feels overwhelming to my emotional system. And also I start to shut down or get really like controlling whatever my response is with my partner. So it starts to shut down my relational system. Imagine if I could start practicing just patience with my jealousy and saying, okay, I'm getting information and I can hold myself. I can hold a big emotion and not escape from it and just be, wow, whoa, this is impressive. What if I just let myself be in awe of what a big emotion this is and not take any action too quickly and just allow myself to experience it. And this often responds really well to doing some somatic work or some nervous system regulation work, not because I should be calm about everything, right? But about, like, because honestly, we're talking about threat detection system, but to just be able to come into myself and say, if I can sit with jealousy, damn, like that's a superpower. I can sit with jealousy and not rush to blame or shame anybody else, not rush to have anybody else fix it, and not freak out and panic and just be with it for, can I be with it for 5 minutes? Can I be with it for an hour? And I often work with people like, could you practice being with that feeling for, say, a weekend and saying, I feel jealous and I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I'm going to let this be. And once we build up that muscle, we realize that we actually have the capacity to sit with a lot of difficult emotions, ones that are hard for us. And this is actually a good spot to remind people that not all of us experience jealousy as just challenging. Some of us also experience jealousy as profoundly arousing. Yeah. So it's just worth noting that for some of us, learning to sit with jealousy is just learning to access that, oh, jealousy is also a turn on. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another way to deepen our self-awareness and our self-intimacy.
Yeah, definitely. I would also love to know, like, how does jealousy appear in monogamous versus non-monogamous relationships? Have you found in your research that there is a difference between these?
Yeah. So the first big difference I have, so I've run consecutive studies that then were brought into a comparative analysis. The first was on non-monogamous individuals, the second on monogamous individuals. The biggest difference that showed up is actually pretty simple and something that we can all address. It's that in monogamous relationships, people reported an expectation that their monogamy would protect them. They didn't expect to feel jealous. And when jealousy came up, they expected their partner to solve it. They expected that to happen. In non-monogamous relationships, the people who are successfully managing this and figuring it out, and remember, they're inviting in the proverbial interrupter, right? The person who theoretically could interrupt, they're inviting them in. They were processing jealousy as I'm gonna address this. They were noticing it, and so they were able to talk about it with themselves, like an inner dialogue that was self-supportive, and they could talk about it in their communities. So in the monogamous reports, where do people talk about jealousy? Because if you start talking about jealousy in the monogamous container, the most likely response you're gonna get is, "What the hell did they do?" Well, what's going on? And now we're into this blame game, and now we're down the detective route, and people are off on their internet detective skills, and we're looking for someone to blame rather than just being like, "Ooh, I hear that you have a big feeling. Let's just talk about that." But in non-monogamy, the folks were reporting, "Yeah, we do. We just get together, and sometimes we're just talking about the fact that, yeah, I feel jealousy, and this sucks, and I'm not enjoying it right now. Or I'm feeling jealous, but actually I'm doing really well with it, and I'd like to celebrate that." So there's a normalization that just isn't present, but that can be. We could change that in the monogamous world, because all we'd have to do is allow space for jealousy to be a completely normal thing that happens in relationships from time to time, and that doesn't necessarily mean that anything's wrong, but does deserve attention. We don't want to jump to conclusions about what it means.
I find it really interesting how in monogamous relationships, they think that the monogamy is a protector of a relationship, or that means that it instantly takes away the threat of other people or of other relationships forming, or even just for jealousy, to address, jealousy as an emotion. And it's just very interesting that people have that opinion.
Right. It's unfortunate, and it's kind of awkward, really, because if you think about it from just just back out a step and take it out of the personal and think about it in someone else's relationship, monogamy actually introduces the possibility of jealousy. It actually increases it because you're supposed to only get all of these needs met by this one other person. And over the last 150 years, we have vastly increased what that list of things you're supposed to get from that one person. From now, it's not just a marriage because of property or survival, but now we're also supposed to get our friendship. They're supposed to be our best friends. They're supposed to be everything. Our emotional support, our physical support, our sexual support, our child rearing support. So we're supposed to get all those needs met by one person. And also, by the way, you should never feel jealous because why would there ever be jealousy? But of course there is, because if jealousy is about an interruption, well, an interruption now actually is much less expected, much more necessary to protect against, right? So my threat detection is going to go up. Think about it. Like, it makes me think of in Star Trek, they'd be like, okay, shields up mm-hmm. because we've got a lot to protect here. Monogamy is writing a check it can't cash, right? It's saying, sure, you don't need to be jealous anymore. You know, you're monogamous. You got a lot to protect now. Whereas in non-monogamy, there is a certain understanding when people shift from a mono paradigm to a non-mono paradigm. There's this really early understanding that most people have that they're like, well, I guess I'm going to have to deal with jealousy. Oh, well, and they might be really freaked out about that, or they might be very nonchalant, but they know. So that's the other big difference. And it comes across as an attitudinal difference, because one of the things that can come up in my research, monogamous folks who were struck by big jealousy felt really, really intensely how this shouldn't have happened to them. So they like big defensive, like it shouldn't have happened. It's a really uncomfortable place to ask for help from, right? Like it shouldn't have happened to me. And now this can also fuel our shame. There is also on the other side of the puzzle, though, in non-monogamous communities, some people feel ashamed if they feel jealousy. Because in some non-monogamous circles, people are like, that's unevolved. How could you have jealousy? If you're non-monogamous, you shouldn't feel jealousy anymore. You should just transcend your jealousy. That's not how emotions work. We don't transcend our emotions. We work with them. We dance with them. We allow and release. Like, we got to deal with that.
I have heard so many times from people who practice non-monogamy, we can't experience jealousy now. This, you know, with non-monogamy, it means, or with our open relationship, you know, this just means that it's impossible to experience it. And I always will. Always will comment back and be like, are you sure? Like, there's value in jealousy. Like, you know, even just something as simple as, you know, your partner is busy off, you know, let's say they're spending more time with one partner and you're like, oh, what is this telling me that I need? I actually want maybe more time with you, or I need to spend more time in solitude, or whatever it is. Like, I always just find it so interesting when they just think that it just eradicates jealousy.
Yeah. It is interesting because I've never met a deep spiritual practitioner who's like really, really working with the letting go. I've never met one who says, oh yeah, I can't feel anger anymore. I can't feel sadness anymore. In fact, I can't imagine watching someone go through deep spiritual practices who's actually looking to never feel sad again. Like that sounds wildly insane to me to think like, oh, they're never going to feel sad. Like I can't picture the Dalai Lama saying, no, I could never feel sadness. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're working with that. Like there are these waves because we're currently embodied. We are currently here in this plane of existence and it's messy. And so you might get to a spot where you experience jealousy very rarely. Or you might be a person who doesn't currently experience jealousy. But here's the kicker. That doesn't make you morally superior. It just doesn't. Because emotions are not, they're not a moral judgment. If someone experiences, in fact, I would go so far as to say, if someone's experiencing really profound anger, but has deep control over their actions and their words, and they're experiencing their anger, but they are expressing that in healthy ways and connecting to other people, I'm impressed. I'm impressed. The same goes for jealousy. If someone's like, I am in the grips of jealousy, this is really hard, and I'm doing my work, I'm unpacking this shit, and I'm actually going to be present to the fact that this is a big emotion, and I'm going to do the work. I'm impressed. Mm. When somebody says, I just can't feel it. Like, remember, you're not dead yet. Could show up tomorrow. We don't know. So careful. Yeah. And don't build up that shame, the burden of shame. Because if you are in a poly circle, or if you're in, you know, a relationship where you're practicing openness, and you start delegitimizing jealousy, and then it all of a sudden pops up like a beach ball that's been held underwater, the person who experiences that jealousy is likely to feel an increased level of shame. And where do they go? Who do they turn to? What do they do? Now they've actually got a problem, because in their community, this isn't okay. And that's terribly unfortunate. And we don't need to do that to each other.
Mm. Yeah. It's really interesting. And I've always found it fascinating, the even just differences between the like monogamy, non-monogamy, and the differences within non-monogamy, obviously, because there's so many different relationship structures. Just this conversation around certain emotions like jealousy, that even just the, I'm sure you probably talked about this many times before, but trying to be like, oh, I should turn my jealousy into like compersion, or like just that the two can't coexist, like that there's this movement of we need to move away from this instead of just sitting with it.
Yeah, it's ironic. I can say this. My friend and colleague, Dr. Marie Tuen, is a premier compersion researcher. In fact, she has a book called What is Compersion, due out in June of 2024. And she and I meet regularly to talk about jealousy and compersion. And the conclusion that we have come to is that not only can they coexist, jealousy and compersion, but in fact, they have different raw materials. Like it does not make any sense to say, I'm going to turn my jealousy into compersion, because jealousy itself, well, it's made of, like we talked about, these primal emotions. It's made up of fear and anger and sadness and shame. It's made up of that. Nowhere in there is joy. Jealousy itself isn't made of joy. We don't experience jealousy because we felt joy. But compersion is about joy for another's joy. So its raw materials are quite literally different. So if I try to turn it, I just think alchemically, that doesn't work. That just doesn't work. The base materials I put into the pot, just they're not going to turn into
that.
They're not the same. They're not the same. But I can sit with, Marie and I coined a word called comper struggle, where we're like, I really want to feel compersion. My attitude is aligned with compersion, and my body and some of my thoughts are jealous. So I'm sitting in the comper struggle. Just be with it.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's great to like hear that like a new word, I guess, something, a new word for an experience that people have. So I would love to talk about the steps towards like working with jealousy. And I've seen your like 5-step jealousy roadmap before. And yeah, I'd love to just unpack what these steps look like.
Yeah. You know, I talk about the jealousy roadmap quite a lot, and it's easy to find. If you go to jealousyroadmap.com, boom, you'll find it. I didn't invent it. What I did is I listened to a lot of people talk about working with jealousy successfully, and there was a theme. So my research participants were the ones who were already doing this. And out of that, it became obvious, like, oh, they're practicing the same moves, right? They're doing these same things, and they don't know. They're not talking to each other. This is just what they're doing. So it's something that just emerged from the data was, oh, there's a pattern here. So we can follow this pattern. But the cool thing about the jealousy roadmap is the more conversations I have about jealousy, the more I can see where people could benefit from putting their emphasis. And what I've noticed is there are these 5 steps. The 5th one, by the way, is optional. I could have actually skipped it altogether, because the 5th one, I'm just going to skip the beat. It's nurturing compersion. And we just talked about it. You don't actually have to feel compersion. So if we just talk about the 4 steps for a minute, the first two we've already talked about. They're really quite straightforward. You notice jealousy, what it feels like in your body, and you name it. You take ownership over, this is what it is, and this is how it feels for me right now. That's pretty straightforward. And if everyone started doing that with their jealousy right now, today, we would see a massive difference in how jealousy is worked with. Because the number one thing that I see from people who are struggling with jealousy is they tell me they're not feeling jealous. They come into my office. They know I specialize in jealousy. They know what my whole life has been built around. And they sit and they describe what's going on in their relationship. And they tell me, I'm not jealous, but I'm angry about this and I can't believe this happened. And I really feel frustrated about that. Like, oh, so it sounds like you're really feeling like there's a risk here. Like there's like you could lose something. You like there's something going on. Yeah, that's jealousy. So I would love if everyone just accepted and owned the fact that when we feel a threat to a relationship based on the interruption of another person, that's jealousy and it's okay. And that noticing and naming can become second nature. And I've now taught it to little kids and they're like, yep, I get it. Little kids can learn this. My teenagers have all learned this. So they can, once we notice it and name it, the unfortunate thing is the other two steps, more complicated, mm-hmm. is the third step that I find people struggle with the most, actually. The third step is about figuring out what jealousy means for you. Like what does jealousy mean about my relationship? What does it mean about who I am? So if you are a person who has had an inner narrative of like jealousy means that I am a bad poly person, or jealousy means that my monogamous relationship is bad, is objectively bad, and other people would judge it like something's wrong with it because I shouldn't feel this way. There's a lot to unpack there. So I don't want to rush past that step three. Step three is people who work with their jealousy well really unpack what's going on in here. What kind of jealousy is this? And what's the story I'm telling myself about this? And they allow that to take some time. And then they allow themselves to start working with some new jealousy narratives and start embodying like, what if jealousy is, yep, an important reaction, but it doesn't necessarily mean something is wrong with me or wrong with my relationship. And that can take months for someone to start working through. I work with people in a program called the Year of Opening. And in the Year of Opening, I mean, we're together for a whole year. So It often takes more than that year for people to really, they'll write back to me later and be like, I think I finally feel it. Like all those months of working on this. And I think I finally feel how my jealousy itself isn't the problem. It's what I do with it. It's what happens next. So I would have everyone place emphasis on those first three steps. Mm-hmm. And then step four is tricky because it's the step everybody skips to. Everybody skips to. And I said earlier, like when you feel like a threat has been shown, like you see somebody commenting a little too often on their Instagram posts, or you see your partner at a work event and you're like, they are way too cuddly over there. Or you're in a non-monogamous relationship and all of a sudden you realize that the things you thought were boundaries are not being observed. You're like, oh, you know what? I think my partner is actually not having protected sex, or whatever it is. Something comes up that feels like there's a threat. Usually what we do is jump to, I got to fix it. So we skip to step four, and step four is important, but it's step four for a reason. I want everybody to work through those initial steps of working with what's going on in me and then get to navigating your needs. Like, do you have clear relationship expectations? Are they explicit? Do you have agreements with your partners? Do you even know what you need? Or have you just been counting on your relationship structure to protect you? Navigating your needs can take quite a bit of time because most of us don't actually have clearly negotiated relationships. Most of us are living with a bunch of assumptions, and those assumptions are fine until they're not, right? Like if you live in an implicit assumption, that's just, it's fine. It's doing okay. I was in a monogamous marriage for years with someone who knew that I fell in love with other people all the time. And we talked about it like casually. We talked about it in our fantasy life, in my fantasy life. We talked about it. And then one day I told him that I was having those same kind of big feelings, but for somebody that he wasn't comfortable with me having these feelings about, because this person had a penis. They were a guy. And all of a sudden it felt different to him. And we'd never actually had a conversation about where the line was for my husband. We that never came up. So I didn't know that I was violating like a core principle of how he was keeping himself, like, okay, I'm not jealous. This is totally okay. I didn't know where the line was because we'd never actually had those conversations. Now, I don't have a one penis policy in my current marriage, but I would rather have known that that's what was going on originally. But if we skip to that step, usually we miss out on gaining the self-awareness that we really need in the meantime.
I love those steps. I think there's so much value in there. And as you said, it's a process. This isn't just something you can sit down in one day and, you know, bang it all out, do your journaling, whatever, and you know, get to the place of, I guess, having gone through all the steps and feeling confident within that. Something you did just say then, which I don't know if you can talk to, but I find really interesting, and I don't know if there's any research on it, but in heterosexual presenting relationships where particularly a penis owner finds the threat of the same genitals of another penis owner more threatening than with a vulva owner. I hear it all the time where, you know, typically this is very general, but like a man will say, oh, you can sleep with, you know, a girl, or you could kiss a girl or whatever, that's fine, I'm not going to get jealous. But if there's a man in the picture, absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just talk real stuff. First off, I don't have data. I don't believe data currently exists on how frequently this happens, in part because people don't admit it, right? Self-reports are really, really hard. And I'm not sure that we could develop a study that would appropriately reveal the unconscious motivations of that. But what I can speak to is the fact that I literally talk to people every day, every single day, about exactly these situations. And the most common experience that I see in a heterosexual presenting relationship, regardless of whether one or both people are bisexual and out, or pansexual and out about it, there is this premise that's given to the idea that, yep, it's okay and I don't feel threatened about you having sex with vulva owners. I feel okay with that. But oof, the penis. I can't think of a single damn thing that points more to the fact that we live in a patriarchy that presents cisgender men with the idea that their worth has something to do with where their cock gets sheathed. Like, it feels insane to overlook that. And at the same time, it's real. I don't want to discount the fact that what these men have reported to me, what I hear them say is like, I don't necessarily want to feel okay about this, but here's the thing. I'm watching my wife date. She's dating women. I feel okay. I watch her go on a date with a guy. I freak the hell out. My nervous system goes crazy. I don't know what to do. The question for me isn't about whether this happens, because I just know it is happening. I like here are these guys sitting in my office saying, yes, that's happening. The question for me is, what are you doing about it? Because just because something is happening doesn't mean you get to act on it. So if I get super jealous and I go into a rage and I decide that it's okay for me to surveil my partner's phone, to start following him places, track his location, or throw a rageful fit and hit him, these are not okay things for me to do just because I feel jealous. I would say the same thing. Just because I feel jealousy when my partner is with another person with a penis, it doesn't mean it's okay for me to actually control their experience. And I got to figure out a path. Like, how do I get from where I am, where I'm like, yeah, I get you. Intellectually, I understand that that's not great. What do I do? And I hear so many men describe essentially wanting a magic trick. They want to just like experience relief from that. They're like, yeah, if you could just make it go away. But the relief is going to come in walking the jealousy roadmap yourself, in getting really skillful at using nervous system regulation tools, at making sure that you actually have emotional support that's not reinforcing the idea that you should be upset when your wife is out with somebody with a penis, making sure that you've actually created a community for yourself where you can celebrate your wife's autonomy in that moment. And I'm using the word wife here really generally just to like, right, that mode of like, if someone's in my, that wifey role, like that they shouldn't have access to more than one penis. It's such, I've never met a man who's proud of feeling that way, who wasn't also terribly misogynistic in other ways, right? So yeah. As soon as I get outside of the misogyny and I'm like, these are guys who are really trying to do well. They really are. But this is like a, it's like a misogyny hangover. And they have to do the unpacking work. And we cis women wifey types, we have to not just say, oh, it's okay, I understand, and just give up. It might be that we can build some time in for them to do their work. I could imagine, and I have walked through this with people where they're like, okay, over the next 6 months, he's committed to doing this work. And so I've committed to like being really present to his work, but I'm not going to just say, yeah, it's okay. You feel jealousy, so I will experience a limitation. Because that is us actually enabling them to not do their emotional work.
Yeah.
It's a painful spot to be in.
Yeah, it is a very painful spot. And I've been in that experience before. I've heard other people be in that same experience before. And obviously we have this, you know, roadmap for the individual that they can begin to work through. Do you have any tips for if trying to support your partner then in them moving through this?
Yeah, one of them is start some really solid co-regulation practices, especially around partings and re-entries. So if you're going to be dating non-monogamously, and you're currently partnered with someone who is feeling some level of either ownership or some insecurity around you specifically going out with other people with penises, imagine if what's happening for them from their perspective is they're just always kind of on alert now because they're freaked out and they're like, I know I shouldn't be controlling, but now they're feeling on alert all the time and their nervous system's dysregulated. It's their job to deal with their nervous system, and we can be supportive by saying, well, okay, what would it look like for you to feel supported as I'm leaving for dates, as I'm coming back into connection with you? What would help? This applies to cis women who are experiencing a partner coming home, right? Like, for instance, what does a good coming back together feel like for you? Does it feel like we emotionally connect? Does it feel like we physically connect? Oftentimes what happens is people come back together. There's a lot of tension and pain in the room, and jealousy is actually there in the room with them. And rather than deal with that in their bodies, they rush to debrief. They rush into this like debriefing and like sharing details or pulling out details before they're actually ready to, before they've reconnected or before they've been able to regulate their nervous system. So I would build in plans and time to co-regulate, to get my nervous system to sync up with yours as you process through like, yeah, okay, you're experiencing a feeling and that feeling comes with a bunch of sensations. The sensations feel like a threat to your nervous system. Okay. I can support all of those things without giving up my autonomy because I can be literally physically supportive. I can also make sure that, again, I'm supporting you being in a community that actually encourages you to shift, right? I can't do that for a person, but I can make sure that I put out there, hey, there are communities, there are podcasts to listen to. I can make those suggestions. And that's, to me, that's not doing their work for them. You can make the suggestion. If they don't go, that's on them. But you can. If you happen to be the resource finder, there's one in every dyad. Somebody's like more inclined that way. You can offer the suggestions. If they're not willing to pick that up and then do something with it, then I have possibly the worst news of this whole podcast, which is you cannot change this for someone. You can't change their jealous response. You can't change how it feels in their body for them. And so sometimes that means we're incompatible with a particular partner at this time in their life. And that's really hard to hear and really hard to deal with. And depending on how interwoven and enmeshed your lives are, it can actually be physically incredibly difficult to disentangle. But it might be the truth anyways.
Yeah. And I think that's also an important just reminder for people. I think we're always like, a lot of people are in that fixing state of what can I do, like trying to do everything for their partner, which can be really helpful. But at the end of the day, is this working? And yeah, not always just going off hope for the future person if they're not actually, you know, doing anything for that is working towards change.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to ask yourself, and I ask myself this like, well, literally every morning with the anchor partner who I live with, is do I love this person as they are today? And do I like this person as they are today? And my answer doesn't have to be 100% yes. Like I love them in every way. I would change nothing. I can hope for shift and also love them exactly as they are. But if I don't love them as they are and I love just the version of them in my imagination, well, then I'm going to refer all the way back to the beginning of this episode when I said, yeah, your imagination's really powerful, but it stops at the edge of your psyche. It does not actually convert theirs. They're going to have to join you in that new imagination of what's possible for them. And you're not obligated to stay with someone just because they feel jealous.
Yes.
Yeah, and I say that absolutely, as a pro jealousy researcher.
No, absolutely. I'd love to know, I ask all of my guests this question at the end, what is something that is orgasmic to you?
Oh, okay. I have a ridiculous answer for anyone who's suffering, but for me, jealousy. I am one of those people who experiences jealousy as arousing. I didn't always know that, but yeah, I know how now to work with my jealousy from a place of orgasm and orgasmic release, and that makes it a lot friendlier to work with. So
yeah, that. I can only imagine. So thank you so much for coming on. Where can the listeners find you, your content, podcast, can work with you, all those things?
Yeah, if anybody is looking to follow me on social media, you can find me at Dr. Jolie_Hamilton. It's Dr. D-R Jolie, J-O-L-I underscore Hamilton, like the musical. And if you're interested in the roadmap, go to jealousyroadmap.com, download it, find out more. There's also a whole masterclass you can get access to when you've run through the jealousy roadmap. You'll find there's a lot more you can deep dive in.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge on jealousy. I know this is going to really expand people's minds and just, yeah, help them be able to have a better relationship with themselves and others.
Thank you so much for having this conversation, Emily. It really does matter.